Hello, everybody. My name is Declan Mangan. I am now a junior at IU. I am studying filmmaking, and welcome to season two of My Animated Life. Here, we discuss anything animation in general, whether it's one topic or going over everything about animation and why I love it. So today we're going to be talking about the Oscars. But first, I want to discuss something new. My recommendation of the week. So my recommendation of the week has been Hotel. If you know, you know. It is an Amazon Prime show that is a musical created by Vivian Medrano, a.k.a. Vizzy Pop, who made Hell of a Boss. And this is her claim to fame, as it were, where she created art on DeviantArt of her characters and all that. So it's now a show on Prime, and it's 8 episodes. The next 2 are coming out this week, I believe, or if you guys are listening right now, chances are they're already out and season 2 is in the works. Right now they're recording. So, yep, that's my recommendation. It's 8 episodes. It's crass, but there's some good songs and it has some nice adult humor and also some good Broadway actors that are involved, including Beetlejuice himself and Mirabelle Madrigal from Encanto. So, yes, that is my recommendation of the week. And if you want to see more of Has Been Hotel, check it out. Anyway, our topic today is, as I already mentioned, the Oscars. If you guys don't know, the Oscars is a annual event where people celebrate the movies of last year. So, usually we talk about people talk about writing, best picture, director, but some people always talk about animation being overlooked in the Academy, and that is a crying shame because we all know animation is just as important as normal movies. And so last week they announced who will be nominated, and I have to say, pretty good list. This is actually the list I was hoping for. So first, we're going to go through what they're called, and then we're going to go by one and why I like them. And if I haven't seen the movie, I'll try my best to tell you what I know about the movie. So here we go. So the five movies that are nominated for Best Animated Feature include Hayao Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron, Studio Ghibli's latest film. Elemental, Pixar's recent success, directed by longtime Pixar animator Peter Song. Robot Dreams, which is based on a book of my childhood. I didn't know about it till now. I didn't know it was based on a book, and I looked it up and was like, oh yeah, I remember this book. I loved that. And then Nimona, the once canceled Disney movie that could, which is now on Netflix, and I just rewatched it. We'll discuss it. And I think the last one is the Spider-Man movie, Across the Spider-Verse, the sequel to the much loved Into the Spider-Verse. And it's a pretty good list. Of course, there are a few people that are like, oh, but where's the Mario movie? Or where's the new TMNT movie? Look, guys, I think those movies are not really as big as the 5 movies they nominated, okay? Like, I get it. I like the TMNT movie, and the Mario movie was much better than I expected. But there's an interest in it, and I like it. So, of course, some things were snubbed. Spider-Man and Boy and a Heron didn't get Best Original Score or Best Picture, which sucks. Some other movies that didn't get any awards include John Powell, who did this soundtrack for Migration, which is a pretty good soundtrack. And he's been long deserving of an Oscar since he did How to Train Your Dragon. And of course, there's a few others, including Wish, which makes sense. Wish was disappointing. Once Upon a Studio didn't get Best Animated Short, which is understandable because it aired on ABC and it didn't technically count. So that didn't get in. But yeah. So we're just going to discuss the animated features. So first up is The Boy and the Heron. As I already mentioned, it's Hayao Miyazaki's, eighth film he's made with Studio Ghibli and G-Kids. Well, not G-Kids, because G-Kids now owns the English distribution. And supposedly it was his quote-unquote final film until he said he had another idea, and now he's sticking around at Studio Ghibli, because of course he is. He's the never-retiring old man he is who wants to create art. So this is this movie is based on a book of the same it's based on a book that is the Japanese title, How Do You Live? Which Hayao Miyazaki, I believe, was drawn to because, well, it was a movie that he wanted to make to tell his grandchildren that death happens, but art is forever or something like that. So that's the basic gist of the movie. The English title is misleading. People say it's about The Boy and the Heron. Well, it kind of is and it isn't, where mainly focuses on the boy trying to find his dead mother or his stepmom or whatever. It's been a while since I've seen it. Everything's a little fuzzy, so I'm going to try my best. And of course, it's Hayao Miyazaki at his most magical. And of course, when he comes back, he always makes something magical like he did with Spirited Away. So it's an interesting movie where it talks about the very nature of life and everything. And some people say it's a semi-autobiographical take of Hayao Miyazaki's life during World War II, where he lost his mother and had trouble living during the whole World War II craze. And his dad was like a plane mechanic. So it definitely is a little autobiographical. There's a lot of good moments in that movie. I really like there wasn't a lot of sound. The score is beautiful. Longtime Hayao Miyazaki composer Joe Hisashi, who did Spirit Away and Nausicaa and all that. So it's a good Studio Ghibli movie. I definitely do think it isn't his best work because he has done a lot more. Because the main character, Mahito, was not very well fleshed out. He was very much a character we're supposed to be. He's like the Alice in Alice in Wonderland, where we're supposed to take perspective on this character and their journey, where it's not as fleshed out. So it sucks, but it definitely is a good sign that Hayao Miyazaki still has an artistic craft. Next up is, I believe, in order, it's Elemental. So I did talk about this in a Lost pilot episode where I talked about the inner workings of this movie and how interesting the movie is when you look at it. Like, I know some people say, oh, this movie sucks and it's probably my least favorite new generation Pixar movie. But to be honest, I thought it was really, really good. For me, I really loved how it wasn't just a interracial romance movie between fire and water, but I also really liked that it had something to say about immigration and how we should appreciate the generations that had to sacrifice everything from their homeland to make a new nice one for their new family that they set up in like America or stuff like that. Because it, again, it's another semi-autobiographical story where Peter Song talked about how he was how he interviewed his family who came from South Korea to make a better world for him and his brother, and his father made like a grocery store in the Bronx, and how he wanted him to take over the grocery store because, well, it was his dream, but also how Peter Song got dismissed as he wanted to pursue art by his family for a little bit. But he eventually they did come around and they loved him. And yeah, it basically was a thank you message for his family. He also was inspired by his own interracial marriage between a white woman and then also how he saw the periodic table as a set of apartments in a city. So it's a mix of a lot of emotion, a lot of figuring out your person and also just who you are. And it's one of those movies where it had a simple plot to understand. Like, it wasn't as nuanced as A Boy and a Heron where you have to think about all this life stuff. It was just a love story between fire and water, how immigration is important to look back on. And I just thought the animation was really nice. And another great score that was done by Thomas Newman, who did Finding Nemo and Wall-E. And he just loves doing this new age music. It's really good. So that's Elemental, Pixar's latest. Personally, it's a good movie for me. Like, it's not 10 out of, it's not in my top 10 of the year, but it definitely is a movie I look back on fondly. Next up is Nimona. I was very rooting for this movie because I love Blue Sky Studios so much. And if you guys don't know, this is a movie that was shelved by Disney for being gay, and they shut down Blue Sky because of it. And if you don't know who Blue Sky is, they made Ice Age, Rio, the Peanuts movie, so on and so forth. Nimona is based on a graphic novel made by N.D. Stevenson, who became a creator of the She-Ra show, the 2017 She-Ra show. And he's married to another prominent gay creator, Molly Ostag, who created, like, The Boy Witch and all that stuff. So Nimona comes from his own Nate's own struggles as a trans person who was once a conservative Christian living in a conservative Christian family. So he definitely had his upbringings, and the movie is about acceptance and also how we should stand up to hate and respect people who are seen as quote unquote monsters when in reality they just want to live happily. So Nimona is definitely one of my favorites because, one, it's an underdog movie made by Blue Sky. Two, it's one of those movies where it's like it comes as a love letter to Blue Sky and how far they've come. And also, I just really like the story. Like, I know they changed a lot about it. Like, they made Ballister more of a misunderstood hero instead of in the comic. He was a little bit more anti-heroish. He wasn't afraid to get a little violent, and he liked more science stuff. So he definitely had more of that. And I believe also there's a lot of other changes that happened in that movie, and they wanted to end it on a nice, bittersweet moment. So Nimona is one of my favorite movies of last year, so I'm secretly hoping it wins. Next up is a movie I haven't seen, but I know the story. It's called Robot Dreams, and this is a international movie made by Pablo. I don't know his last name, but I know his first name's Pablo. And it's based on a childhood book that I know called the same name. It was illustrated by a woman. I don't know the name right now. And she's a famous graphic novelist, and I remember reading the book a lot. It was a, what's the word? It's nostalgic, and I remember a lot of the framings and the bittersweet ending it had and what it's about. It's basically about a dog who feels lonely and needs a friend. So he makes his own robot friend, and they eventually just become inseparable. So that's kind of like the basic gist of it, and I'm familiar with the story. I've read it 1,000 times as a kid, and I didn't even know it until like this weekend. I looked into it. I was like, oh, I know that story. I'm surprised. I know that story. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching it, and I'm curious to see how close it is to the book, because I don't really remember a lot about it, but I remember some things. Like, I remember how unique the drawings looked and how interesting everything else was. So I definitely am interested in checking Robot Dreams out when it comes out eventually in America. So the last movie, it's Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the sequel to Into the Spider-Verse, that is made by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who, of course, is very controversial for working the animators to the bone. And someone called it working on a death of 1,000 paper cuts. So hopefully the animator just got their due. But this is Sony Animation's, like, 10th, maybe 11th film, maybe even 15th. I'm not sure. But after taking a long break from releasing anything other than putting things out on Netflix and Amazon Prime, they eventually made a new Spider-Man movie where Miles is introduced to a bigger and much more extensive Spider-Verse where he runs into new foes, new enemies, new friends, and it's just another one of those movies where you can tell the creative art is just there from how well animated Spider-Punk is, because he's like an amalgamation of animation running on 2s, 3s, 1s, and it's interesting to think about how detailed that went, and then also how interesting each background looked, where one looked like something out of Sin City, or something looked like it was watercolored, or some scratch sheet paper from the Renaissance. And it just really goes to show how far animation can go with its direction. So with that, interesting. I really do like the promise they have with this movie, where it shows like where the movie's going to go, what's going to happen to Miles now that he's back on Spider-Man 42's world, where it's Sin City-ish and all that. And also, What will Spider-Gwen do? How much will a spot be a threat? Is the universe in danger? And it's all these questions and more that make me excited to see beyond the Spider-Verse, where we're going to finally see the original Spider-Verse crew, Spider-Ham, Penny Parker, and Spider-Man Noir? Yeah, Spider-Man Noir, along with the new introductions, which is a Spider-Punk, Spider-Bite. Spider-Punk's the one that's crazy animated and has a Cockney accent. Spider-Bite is the VR Spider-Woman. And then, not Kamal, Pavita Pavarkar is the Hindi Spider-Man, or Spider-Man India, as he's preferred to be called in the comics. And then also, I believe the enemies are just going to be the spot, and then the antagonists, who aren't really villains but get in the way of Miles' journey, is Miguel O'Hara and Jessica Drew and the rest of the Spider Society. And I'm very curious to see where it goes with Beyond the Spider-Verse. I keep saying that, but it's kind of true. I do like the idea of them setting up this idea that Spider-Man has a set of plot points where get bit by a radioactive spider, the symbiotes, losing somebody, the canon events, the things that can't be changed within the web. But they're big introductional plot points for what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man. And it's interesting to think about how they change the rules too, where it's like there's only one Spider-Man in each universe, and that's not necessarily true, because I know Insomniac Spider-Man was in that movie, and he has a Miles Morales back at home, and also Miles Morales in the animated movie had Peter Parker voiced by Chris Pine, who got killed by Kingpin. So it's interesting to think about where it's like maybe Miguel O'Hara's wrong. Like there's multiple Spider people, and they can all be Spider-Man and all wear the mask. I think my favorite quote from the director is, in the first movie, we wanted to explore everyone can be Spider-Man. And then in the second one is, it's how you are Spider-Man, how you wear the mask, what makes the mask important and whatnot. And it's an interesting development from anybody can wear the mask to how can you wear the mask. So I'm very curious to see where Beyond the Spider-Verse will go. And I'm very curious that we see where Sony Animation's going to be going after they finish this trilogy out. I know there's rumors that there's going to be an R-rated Spider-Man movie, a Spider-Woman movie, and then, of course, they have a bunch of Genndy Tartakovsky movies in the works. One, I believe, is coming out this year, and then also The Black Knight, and then they're working on a bunch of other movies like Tut, a new movie by the Amphibia creator with a script written by Rebecca Sugar, who did Steven Universe, and all these interesting stories that could make something very cool for Sony Animation, because I'm very curious to see where it goes. And with Nimona, I forgot to mention it. Annapurna, the guys who bought Nimona, are actually like making a new animation studio, and it's gonna have like a bunch of Blue Sky veterans on it. Like the director, I believe Troy Quayne, who worked on Nimona and Spies in Disguise, is making his own movie. And then the original CEO of Blue Sky and the voice of Scrat, Chris Wedge, he's making his own movie about a fish out of water, literally called FOO, Foo. So I'm interested to see upcoming animation get crazier and crazier. So with that said, I believe I covered every animated movie that is nominated for a feature for the feature. And I want to go into what I think should win. I would love to see either The Boy and Heron or Nimona get the award, because those are my favorite those movies are pretty, pretty good, and I would love to see them win. Not only as a Nimona can be a win to be like, hey, anything is possible, even when a movie starts to get canceled. And then Boy and a Heron is like, an old geezer can still make, well, the better term is an old dog can learn new tricks, even if some of his story stuff is weird, like his main character problems. But still, an old dog can learn new tricks. Nimona, the movie became alive. And then Elemental, Elemental is, again, not on my top 10 of last year, so I wouldn't mind seeing it win, but I also think there are better movies that deserve it. I haven't seen Robot Dreams, of course, but I'm very familiar with the story, and I would love to see another international movie win animated feature. I believe the last time that happened was Spirited Away for Hayao Miyazaki. So it would be interesting to see the international movies get something. And then I believe the winner is going to be Across the Spider-Verse. Everyone's winning that. It's the award movie that is going into it. But I think what might win, because we all know the Golden Globes are kind of close to what the Oscars will choose, I think it's going to go to The Boy and the Heron. I think it would be an interesting take. I think it would be really cool to see Hayao Miyazaki get up on stage and talk, because I believe last time he didn't go because he was protesting America's response to Iran, so he didn't want to travel to America at that time. So it would be interesting to see him get up on stage and actually talk, or at least a representative at G-Kids or producers or whatnot. So it'd be cool to see that win, but I wouldn't really mind any of the movies to win minus Elemental, because they're... And then also Robot Dreams, because Elemental is the weaker of those movies, and then I haven't seen Robot Dreams yet. But I wouldn't mind seeing The Boy and the Heron, Nimona, and Across the Spider-Verse win. And it would be another non-Disney win, and that would make it 2 years in a row where an animated movie that isn't Disney-related won the award. And it definitely is a good sign to see the Academy be like, oh, there are movies more deserving than giving it to Disney always. So, yeah, that's what's going on with Best Animated Feature. And, of course, we also have to talk about some of the other nominations, of course. Just a small bit, because this is off topic. This is an animation podcast, not a everything movie-related podcast. So I will mention a few things. First, Barbie got snubbed in a lot of areas. I also think Wonka was snubbed and The Color Purple was snubbed. I think Wes Anderson could finally win his Oscar for his live-action short film, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And again, Diane Warren makes the Oscars for the 13th year in a row with her Flaming Hot song, so they're going to have to give it to her eventually to just stop. But for original song, I think it's going to What Was I Made For from Barbie. So another win for Billie Eilish, I guess. I almost said Billie Irish. Everyone says Billie Irish. I don't know. Anyway, with that said, I believe that is today's episode. Animated features and everything else about the Oscars, and I just went into what I love about these movies, and hopefully you can do the same. So if you want to check out these movies, Robot Dreams hasn't been released anywhere. The Boy and the Heron is available to rent. Elemental's on Disney Plus. Nimona's on Netflix. And Across the Spider-Verse, I believe, is on Netflix itself, too. So my name's Ben Declan, and again, you've got a peek at my animated life.